नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, text number 6. Ragyam Britim Karadana Danda Shulka Didarunam Manyamano Dirgha Sat Tra Vyajena Visasarjaha Ragyam Britim Karadana Danda Shulka Didarunam Manyamano Dirgha Satra Vyajena Visasarjaha Ragyam Britim Karadana Danda Shulka Lidarunam Manyamano Dirgha Satra Vyajena Visasarjaha Ragyam of the kings, Vritim, source of livelihood, Kara, taxes, Adana, realization, Danda, punishment, Shuka, fines, Adi, etc. Darunam, which are very severe. Manyamanaha, thinking like that. Dirga, long. Satra, sacrifice. Vyajena, on the plea. Visasarja, gave up. Ha, in the past. Whatever antadharana the supreme royal power had to exact, whenever antadharana the supreme royal power had to exact taxes, punish his citizens or fine them severely, he was not willing to do so. Consequently, he retired from the execution of such duties and engaged himself in the performance of different sacrifices. Purport, it is clear herein that the king sometimes has to perform duties which are not very desirable, just because he is the king. Similarly, Arjuna was not at all willing to fight, because fighting or killing one's own kinsmen and family members is not at all desirable. Nonetheless, the Kshatriyas had to perform such undesirable actions as a matter of duty. Maharaj Antadhana was not very happy while exacting taxes or punishing the citizens for their criminal activities. Therefore, on the plea of performing sacrifices, he retired from the royal majestic power at a very early age. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Si Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. What to speak of the king? Everybody has duties that must be performed, even though they're tedious. Right? There's always going to be some tedium in life. So, for each of the varnas and for each of the ashrams, there are duties, requirements that need to be performed and may not be entirely desirable. Like, you know, when I was a student, I never liked going to school very much. Always somebody telling you what to do. And you know, they give you homework and you have to work. For a householder, you know, one has to clean the house, wash your clothes, right? Clean your teeth even. As a kid, I used to hate having to clean my teeth. What's that a symptom of? What, not wanting to do prescribed duties, what's that a symptom of? Huh? Ignorance. Yeah, laziness, indolence. Oh, do I have to? Why do I have to? Why do I have to do these things? Well, this routine work is the foundation upon which we build civilization, basically. These very basic activities, primarily in the mode of goodness, actually. Because the whole Varnashram system is designed to order society in such a way so that the very basics, like, you know, cleaning your teeth, washing your clothes, cleaning the house, this is all conducive to the cultivation of the mode of goodness. Even the duty of the king, he has to punish wayward citizens. Huh? And that's not a very pleasant duty, as Prabhupada points out here. Arjuna didn't want to fight. He was going to have to fight his kinsmen. And you know, the Kshatriyas would recommended to see everybody within their kingdom or everybody within their domain as being part of their family. Like Prabhupada says, even the animals are part of the family. You know, the dairy farmers are working in a very grinding, demanding industry. Right? Every morning you have to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning to milk your cows, and of course they also get milked in the evening as well, and there's, you know, you have to look after your herd, Anyway, there was the dairy farmers are finding it difficult to make a living. They work hard to protect their animals, and they're being squeezed by those who want to sell their product at the cheapest price. Because we know that cow protection, production of milk, is an expensive business. So anyway, there was an article I think it might have been either a 7:30 report, something like that, on the ABC. And this dairy farmer was being interviewed, and he was saying how difficult it is to make a living and how difficult it is to manage the herd. And he said, even though and he was saying how he was going to have to cull his herd, not a very pleasant topic, but he was saying, we don't like to have to kill our animals. We have a relationship with them. So even, you know, we think, oh, the kami dairymen, you know, they're just butchers. But they're not entirely. They're caught in a system. Huh? And so they have affection for their animals. They have a relationship. Even Brian, anybody, you know Brian, Buck to Brian? His father was a dairy. His brothers still are dairymen out Warrigal way. And he told me that his father had a name for every one of the animals in his herd. Right? So they had a relationship, because now they're numbers. You know, they've got a tag on their ear and they're a number. But his father in 50, 60 years ago had names for all of his animals. So this is the mood of the Kshatriya is to have a relationship with all of the citizens, like a parent. And just we discussed this before, just like a parent sometimes has to chastise the children, like these guys here. Sometimes they need chastisement, right? But you don't like to do it. Is that right? No. But you must. You must discipline your children. If they're misbehaving, they need attention. Not that, oh, it's too hard, I think I'll go and chant Hare Krishna. In one sense, that's a mode of ignorance, because it ignores the reality of the responsibility. The Kshatriya has a responsibility to look after the citizens and to direct them. Of course, he must be familiar with the principles, just like a parent should be familiar with the principles of parenthood and looking after children. Something that we don't necessarily get taught, or we find out the hard way. There are always going to be duties that are at one time or another not relishable, but we do it out of duty because we understand the importance of maintaining this order and maintaining this structure and training. Training and education is an essential element of any social setting. Right? And especially in spiritual practice and in spiritual life, we're given guidelines. Right? Our devotional service is naturally within the heart of every living entity, right? What's that verse? Nitya Siddha. The eternal perfection of Krishna Prem resides in everybody's heart. Right? Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem. Sadhya Kabunoi. Shravanadi, it's reawakened, or actually our consciousness is purified so that we can connect to our original identity, Sudha Chitte, by hearing, by the bhakti, by the process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, Sudha Chitte Karaye Udoy, the natural mood of Krishna Prema, or love for Krishna, or affection for Krishna, is reawakened. It's in the heart, but it needs to be reawakened by the process of hearing, or the process of bhakti, beginning with hearing. There are things, there are prescriptions, rules and regulations that are given to us that will help to reawaken that natural mood. But even the process of bhakti, we have to rise early in the morning, especially in this cold weather. Who likes to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Yep, very good. And have a shower. Used to be cold showers. I used to go home. I had a warm shower at home. The devotees in Adelaide knew that I wasn't going to join the ashram if there was a cold shower, especially when I could go home. Then one day, Jami Jaya, it was 5 o'clock. He'd been out very early or very late at night. He came out at 5 o'clock in the morning dragging this big water heater for the Brahmachari ashram. He wouldn't tell us where he got it from. But then when we came to Melbourne, there was one, in the Brahmachari shower, there was one hot water tap. There were the four, is it four cubicles there or three? Four. So if you came late or at a, you know, you were, depending on the order in which you came, you either had to choose a cold or a hot shower. Actually, it was very interesting. I think it was Rameshwara. He was then Rameshwara Swami, visited Melbourne, and they just had cold showers. And he told the devotees, if you want to keep devotees, get warm showers. It's only the fanatics that will go for a cold shower. So, you know, there are some rising early. It's our duty, and we know that by rising early that we're able to, and attending the Mangal Aartik and chanting our japa and studying Prabhupada's books and doing our puja, that time of the day is very conducive to bringing out that mood of bhakti. So there are rules and regulations. They're like the railway. The railway tracks. Without the track, what happens to the train? Doesn't go anywhere. So we need the rules and regulations to kickstart the bhakti. The bhakti's already there, but it's just like a motor car. A properly tuned and constructed motor car will naturally run. It'll go naturally. That's what it's designed to do. But it needs to be started. It needs a start. Sometimes it needs a push. Although in this day and age, you can't push cars anymore to get them started. When I was a kid, if a car didn't start and you got out and pushed it, and you know, boom, 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 and then off it went. Right? So the process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, is that pushing off process. Right? Push it off to get it going. And it requires some guidelines. And accepting those guidelines or those austerities is part of that, is part of that process. So it's natural. And actually, what does it indicate here? If the king wants to perform yajñas and sacrifices, and he wants to do his bhajan, what does that indicate? Here, Maharaj Antardhana was not very happy while exacting taxes or punishing the citizens for their criminal activities. Therefore, on the plea of performing sacrifices, he retired from the royal majestic power at a very early age. Now, what does that indicate about Maharaj Antardhana? What does that indicate? Sorry? Irresponsibility? Could be, yes. That's certainly... what else? What does it mean?
Wanting to absolve himself in the higher.
Yes, what does that mean? Yes, he's a sannyasi. He's given it up. He's more advanced. Could mean that he's lazy, a lazy king, and so that means not really a king. When you think about it, we have to judge. We have to judge the person, if you like, by their qualities, right? This is and it's mentioned. He's actually a very advanced devotee, and so he's more attached to his bhajan and his sadhana, if you like, than he is to performing his worldly duties. And that's a symptom of a devotee. Like Prabhupada says, it's mentioned by Krishnadas Kaviraj, when a devotee chants Hare Krishna, then his material aspirations slacken. Right? Chants Hare Krishna, oh, do I have to go to work? Oh, no. Anybody experienced that? Hey? You chant Hare Krishna, you like chanting Hare Krishna, you want to hear the philosophy, and it's time to go to work. Oh, no. But you do it because we have to do it. Got to pay the bills, pay the mortgage, pay the rent or whatever. So, the performance of all of these activities for the pleasure of Krishna, giving up the results, yat karoti yadasnasi yasjahosi didasi, that is a measure of a devotee, because the devotees will dedicate and commit all of their activities to ultimately to the pleasure of the Lord. But that's quite an advance. That's giving up everything and giving the results of all of their work to Krishna is an advanced stage of, well, at least karma yoga. Right? giving up the results. And when one makes more advancement, then the absorption is in always thinking of Krishna, always performing one's devotional service in that mood of meditation. And so naturally, when a person achieves that stage of consciousness, the purpose for the performance of these activities is, or shall we say, the need to engage one's natural propensities by offering the results of those activities to Krishna is no longer necessary, because the devotee derives great satisfaction and pleasure in and just in performing the bhakti in and of itself. That's a higher level of renunciation, where the need to dedicate the results of one's activities is replaced, if you like, by the devotee always thinking of Krishna and always being absorbed in the process of bhakti or devotional service. So, he's an advanced devotee. Mind you, Vasudeva Srila Prabhupada, his focus on organizing, managing, running, you know, even having to chastise his disciples on occasion when they did something wrong, Prabhupada's engagement in preaching activities and in management, if you like, didn't slacken. In fact, Prabhupada wanted to, he often would say, I want to be, leave me to just translate and print books. But because of the inexperience of his disciples and because of the complexity of the management of ISKCON, Prabhupada was drawn back time and time again to managing, because of that sense of responsibility. So this, that sense of duty for the pleasure of Krishna is still a quality of a devotee. So, it appears here that Maharaj Antadhana was a very advanced devotee, and so had transcended the need to act within the Varnashram setting, and had achieved the perfection of life, which is to be on that level of full absorption, full attraction for Krishna. And so that then became his duty, right? That became his duty. And of course, that's all of our duties in one sense. And depending on our level of advancement, we'll be more or less engaged in the various prescriptions given for our occupational duty and our ashram setting. And of course, that'll then influence or determine what we do, what we do effectively. And depending upon our absorption in Krishna consciousness, that will determine how more or less will be. But look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur, isn't it? It is a very elevated devotee, yet still performed his material duties. Didn't slacken. Right? Until later in his life when he renounced and became more internalized in his bhajan. But here it looks like Maharaj Antardhana is, and we'll see in the next verse. Shall I read the next verse? Yeah, why not? There's no purport, so we'll keep going. Oh, no, yes, there is. Although Maharaj Antardhana was engaged in performing sacrifices, because he was a self-realized soul, he very intelligently rendered devotional service to the Lord, who eradicates all the fears of his devotees. By thus worshipping the Supreme Lord, Maharaj Antardhana, wrapped in ecstasy, attained his planet very easily. So he went back home, back to Godhead. And wrapped is spelled R-A-P-T. You know, sometimes people say, oh, I'm really wrapped in that, and they spell it W-R-A-P-P-E-D. But that's not the... wrapped. Prabhupada says, since sacrifices are generally performed by fruitive actors, it is especially mentioned here to Trapi that although Maharaj Antardhana was externally engaged in performing sacrifices, his real business was rendering devotional service by hearing and chanting. In other words, he was performing the usual sacrifices by the method of Sankirtan Jagya, as recommended herein. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 23. So bhakti, he was engaged in bhakti. That was his sacrifice. Devotional service is called Kirtan Jagya. And by practicing the Sankirtan Yagya, one is very easily elevated to the planet where the Supreme Lord resides. Out of the five kinds of liberation, achieving the same planet where the Lord resides and living with the Lord, is called Salokya liberation. Okay, so I'll read the next one too. Haviradana, the son of Maharaj Antardhana, had a wife named Haviradani. He gave birth to six sons named Bahishat, Gaya, Shukla, Krishna, Satya, and Jitabrata. So next, tomorrow's verse will be text 9. Does anybody have any comments or questions? He was a what?
Advanced devotee. He gave up his position as a king. Did he leave the kingdom on his own, or did he put somebody else?
He had his son, Haviradana. Haviradana, who had six sons, we just read. So we can assume, I think, safely assume, that Haviradana took over the role of ruling the state.
Do we always have to make sure the next generation get trained?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yep. That's why we send our children to school. Right? We look at their, ideally, we look at their propensities and the degree of renunciation that they have, and then we gauge that accordingly. Right? Doing one thing at a time?
Like, if you wanted to only focus on one thing, that is just one thing, devotional service. But our situation is very different. So like,
yes.
So the cause of not wanting to be engaged in others would be lack of motivation. So how do you manage that? Because that is 100% very much necessary as well.
That's why looking at the natural inclination of the individual and their degree of renunciation is important. Right? So, and why there needs to be training and discipline, right? So there are some people who worry about money, right? And they're concerned about owning a house. Right? But there's some people who are not. Right? They don't worry about these things. And so when they're told, Krishna will look after you. If you serve him, he'll look after you. Right? You might live a very simple life. You won't have much money. But they say, oh, okay, I like doing that. And they do it. Right? But then there are others who can't do that because their just natural degree of renunciation is not there. Doesn't mean that they're not devotees, but so they don't have that natural. And see, a more brahminically inclined person will generally be renounced. Right? But somebody who's more And you know, it can't be forced. It can be cultivated, but it can't be forced unnaturally. Right? So, and so that's why we're looking at. Okay, so that's one element of a person's character, how detached they are just naturally, but then also the propensities of that. What are the propensities of those persons, those individuals? What are they naturally inclined to do? Some will be naturally inclined to serve others. And so, you know, there we have the Sudra class. There will be those who are naturally inclined to do business. Right? Business people, make money. Not necessarily make money, but all of the elements of commerce, commercial activity. Right? And then there'll be those who are suited to, they have the natural propensity to organise and to administrate. And of course, you'll see that also in a Vaishya, right? And then there'll be the natural propensities of a Brahmana. Now, the interesting thing in this day and age, it's hard to find somebody who's a pure anything, right? I don't know if you've noticed in yourself. You'll find you might have a little bit of Sudra, a little bit of Brahmana, and a little bit of everything else. Right? So we need to look at those things and see where the dominant characteristics are of a person and then encourage them to do that because they'll be happy. They'll be satisfied exercising their natural tendencies. Most of us are Sudras, even though we like to think of ourselves as Brahmanas. But look at what's our occupation? But if you look at the occupation, that'll tell you what is a person doing. And this is a general rule. It's not always the case. Because, you know, sometimes we're doing things just because circumstantially and out of necessity we have to do it. Right? But we're looking for general tendencies in a person and the degree of renunciation. And that changes also. That's why we have Brahmachari, which is like a student, then Grihastha, which is usually our family life. Right? So these things will change also according to the stage of life that we happen to be in. You know, when you reach 50, 55, 60, you may have had a very active life working in your particular occupation, but by that time, you know, it's time to retire. And of course the Vedic culture is, okay, time to retire, go to the forest, or you don't need to go to the forest necessarily. Go to the forest because it's more peaceful, and in the forest you can chant, you can do more bhajan. This is the idea, right? Don't have to go to the forest necessarily. And you know, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's descriptions of the behaviour of the vanaprastha, and they're wearing, you know, the bark of trees, and don't cut your fingernails, don't shave your, just detach, be detached. But that's not, we're not going to, you know, you're not going to be walking around Albert Park in gum tree leaves or whatever. So we have to understand what the principle is, why we do things, you know, why it's done like that. You know, when you make these garlands, see that? See that thing there? Very pointy. It's poking in the back of my neck. Was poking Prabhupada in the back of his neck all day yesterday. So anyway, okay, so how do we work out what we should be doing? This is your question, right? So how old are you?
27.
Okay, rightio. So that usually would mean you'll be a householder, usually. Get married, right? Is that what your mum and dad have told you? Yeah. Be surprised if they didn't. Okay, what's your occupation?
I just finished my degree.
What doing? What doing? What did you get trained to do?
Analyzing policy, but right now I'm working somewhere.
Yeah, working in a call centre, right? No?
Electronics, consumer electronics manufacturing.
Yeah. This is not uncommon. Get trained in one thing and do something else. Because we don't have a system, often we're not, you know, our parents often say, you know, you've got to do this, or you've got to do that. You've got to be a doctor. Or lawyer, or what? My parents didn't tell me to do that, but so we've got to look at these circumstances, but we've also got to look at what you're actually capable of doing, and how renounced you are. You know, so I don't care about money. I don't want to get married. I'm happy to serve Krishna. Right, right. And so if somebody's like that, then we should encourage it. Your parents might not be very happy about that. Your family and relatives might think that's a horrible idea. Right? But if a person has that, you know, Vedic culture is meant to encourage and support that inclination in somebody, in a person. You won't be very popular going in there. You're right. So how do we work that out? This is why we have a guru. Or shall we say, our parents effectively should help us in the, understanding these things. Or the devotees, you know, those devotees who we learn to trust and who are assisting us in our spiritual pursuits, we try to work out, well, what am I? Who am I? What do I like to do? What do I want to do? Because, you know, we need engagement. And we've got to be engaged in things that we're reasonably good at doing and that we're properly trained to do. Is that right? Then, you know, and we've got 25 years or more to fill of engagement, where we've got to be good at what we do, and it's got to be it's our natural propensity, and we've got the training or we've got the inclination to do it, and we like to do it. Because then you can't stop somebody, they'll just do it anyway. Huh? So how do you work that out? Huh? Aptitude test. Why not? Use whatever you can to work out these things. Because then there's also our karma. You know, you may have the propensity to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, but you don't have the money. Right? So, life is not easy. It's complicated. But it does require a certain amount of an assessment. And it'll be based on, you know, those things. Your age, your propensities, your training, your opportunity, what your karma actually allows you to do. Huh? You may be good enough to be a doctor. Huh? But don't get the opportunity. You're born in you're born on the streets of Calcutta, right? Thing that shocked me when I went to, no, actually it wasn't Calcutta, it was Madras in those days, and we arrived at Madras in the evening, first visit to India, and the bus was driving us to Mahabalipuram, which is a beachside resort in Chennai, very nice place. I don't know what it's like now, but it was pretty beautiful then. But there were all these people sleeping on the street. I was shocked. They were just, and that, you know, lined up on the footpath. Dozens of them. And not just one street, but many streets. And I thought, God, this is their bedroom. Right? That means that's their house. They live on the street. I was just, right? Although it's interesting, you know, you see people living on the street in every city that I visited in Europe. I saw people sleeping on the streets everywhere, right? So if that's your karma, right? If that's, you may have the propensity, but if that's your karma, finished, right? So it require, but you're probably in a good situation because you're educated. You're not sleeping on the street, are you? No. And you're chanting Hare Krishna. That may make life problematic, right? Because you think, I want to serve Krishna. How am I going to do that best? That it does get a little bit more complicated. Because then we have to decide what will my career path be. Right? What will my career? Will I be a devotee, which means quite a bit of a degree of renunciation? So we have to see: is there natural propensity for renunciation in a devotee? Otherwise, if there's not, then okay, get married, get a job, but keep chanting Hare Krishna, because our devotional practice is what's the most important. But if we don't get the balance right, then everything goes all over the place. Right? So, you know, at your age, that's a challenge, because you're trying to work out what you're going to do. And, you know, probably get married. So there's a few obstacles to navigate in that situation. Huh? So make sure that you've got good advisors, good support. Usually that comes from your family and, you know, senior, what we call siksha gurus. Huh? Siksha, our instructors. Any other comments? Suggestions?
Antardhana is actually perfect devotee, I would say perfect. Because he has adopted all his activities in the service of Krishna.
Mm.
And completely detached.
Yeah.
He has hardly any material desires.
Yeah.
So it's completely detached. So far, I was hearing the lecture from Navyogi Maharaj. And he was telling that in 1975, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and there was a gentleman named also, Mr. Gupta. So he had like two rooms in the guest house without paying any rent or anything. And he was trying to do some business, you know.
Mr. Gupta?
For instance, Mr. Gupta.
And he was staying in the... Where was he staying?
He was staying in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
And he had occupied two rooms for his business. Not
where were the two rooms?
Yeah, but he was doing some international business.
Yeah.
And he was not paying any rent. So the temple president in Vrindavan, he reported to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada got so angry. He said, how come? He immediately had to leave the rooms. Because he said...
This was in Krishna Balaram temple.
Yeah. And Prabhupada said, I have attached this stone is for developing pure love of Krishna. And I don't tolerate any nonsense. So this is movement is only not for business. It is for.
And they were having difficulty turfing him out.
Yes. You want love of Krishna to develop this sincerity for the Prabhupada made him right.
Yeah.
And right decision.
Yeah.
And everybody was there.
Yeah. So, there were those they're still there. At the front of the Gurukul, at the front of the Krishna Balaram temple on the Gurukul side, there were shops that Prabhupada had built so that people could occupy them and do business and pay rent. This guy got the roofs and didn't pay the rent. And didn't do any business either, for that matter, probably. Mari?
Who's trying to understand? Basically, Prabhupada's teaching, the emphasis more in Yukta Vairagya.
What's that?
Based on Prabhupada's teaching,
yeah.
The emphasis is more in Yukta Vairagya.
Yes. Yeah.
What I should do and what I want to do when
Prachini Bahishat. Yes. That's a good question. How do I know what's the right thing to do in the context or taking into consideration also what I want to do, right? Ooh, okay. Again, Maharaj Antadhana, it appears, let's have a look. See, he was performing sacrifices, right? Let's have a look. See what we can make out of this. Oh no, Bahishat. These are pious personalities, and it doesn't look like, at least from what's being stated here, that he did this irresponsibly, right? He had his son, a number of sons, in fact, and it appears as if they also took up the responsibilities of managing affairs appropriately, right? It's just giving an example of how he was an advanced devotee and he retired from the execution of his duties as a king and took to the performance of bhakti. That's really the mood that Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, is emphasised here. Now, generally speaking, we would encourage everybody to pursue the path of bhakti. And depending on the renunciation and their faith in the process of bhakti, that will determine the degree to which they are able to relinquish their material duty, right, and just engage in pure bhakti, right, or preaching or whatever, bhajan and devotional service purely. Right, or when I say purely, exclusively, right? And here, Antadhana Maharaj was able to do that. He was such an advanced personality, he was able to renounce his duty, or his duty became just service to Krishna. Right? And so therefore he didn't have to pursue his, you know, being a king anymore, because he would give that to his son responsibly. Responsible king will give that responsibility to somebody else, or usually to the son, because of the, you know, the inheritance, or the way that the reign would be passed on from father to son. So how do we determine that? Again, coming back to this point, what's your name? Sorry.
Anak.
Is that right? Yeah. He say, how do we work that out? How do we know whether I'm being irresponsible or I'm actually, you know, pursuing the proper path? Right? And that's generally going to be determined by the association of our family setting and the association of the devotees, the spiritual guides that we have, the leaders, in other words. So we ask them, what do you think I should do? How renounced do you think I should be? Right? Can be, and yes.
And
yep.
Not only, for example, or japa or meditation.
Yep. Yes. And so what we'll see is that devotees will be just engaged in... So all of us, regardless of what our varna or ashram is, are encouraged to engage in bhakti, right? And when do we do that? When do we do it? What time of the day do we do it? In the morning, yeah. A purely brahminical activity, pretty much. It's mode of goodness. Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is synonymous with goodness. So that means get up early in the morning, and whether you're a sudra, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or none of those things, whatever, male, female, transgender, this, that, or the other thing, right? We all get up in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, worship the deity, you know, perform pure bhakti, right? But then what do we do for the rest of the day? If we're renounced and we have the propensity, we'll just serve Krishna directly by preaching or cooking for him or whatever. There's so many activities, right? And we will depend on Krishna for our material, for our maintenance, if you like, right? And so that's kind of like a brahminical activity, or even a devotional activity where the results, the activity and all of the things that the devotee does is basically engaged in bhakti, directly for the pleasure of Krishna. So there's a certain degree of natural renunciation in that behaviour. But then there will be others who are not so renounced, and who they'll do the bhakti in the morning and ideally also in the evening, but then they'll go to work, right? And then they'll give the results. That's that yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat jahoshi, didasi, yat platform. Right? And so there's still a certain amount of proprietorship that the devotee has in his work and his accumulation of wealth and economic development. And he keeps that for himself. But he still gets up in the morning and chants Hare Krishna like everybody else. Right? So in our culture of bhakti, we allow the individuality of the person to be manifest as they require, as they like, right? Or as to the degree of renunciation that they naturally can embrace. But still, the basis of everything that we do, regardless of what our position is in occupational activities, the basis for our bhakti is in that we all get up in the morning, we all go for Mangalarti, we all chant. So, very much the basis of everything that we do is its foundation is in Brahminical culture, actually. Even if you're a sudra, in your day job. How does that sound?
Yeah,
there's
what you said, for example. The external activity that can favor bhakti or represent bhakti, like for example, every morning sadhana, some devotees or some people can practice the same, can perform mangalarti, chanting rounds, but the motivation is because if I chant my rounds, I'll be able to do better in my work during the day. Or if I'm in mangalarti, I come out because my option of praying or asking for some material benefits is the consciousness more than can be that defined bhakti or pure bhakti. We can be doing the practice every morning with the motivation and more life consciousness.
Hands up, who's doing that?
Myself.
You are.
Sometimes I come to Mongolia because I have to come, not because I want to come.
That's duty.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's all right. That's good. It depends on, it's complicated. It's mixed up, because we are mixed up, right? But we generally encourage everybody, chant Hare Krishna, worship the deity, study or hear the Bhagavata, these basic sadhana, we all do that. And the idea is to purify our consciousness so that we're doing it less for our material motivations and we're doing it more for Krishna's pleasure. But Krishna is not so limited, he's not limited in that he allows us to do what we like and also to do what he likes. And so we can put the two together, right? We put it together and we come up with something that ultimately is then beneficial for us, beneficial for others, and purifying ultimately, so that we move forward to the point of renunciation, right? So we accept everybody, whatever level they happen to be, we accept that and we encourage them. Okay, now chant Hare Krishna. Now do your activities and give the result to Krishna. Right? And that's going to be then tempered, like I said before, by your natural propensity, your level of renunciation. And it will gradually increase. It might even go up and down. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was a pure devotee. Later on I discovered that I wasn't, I was something else. And now I'm working on it. Still working on it. I was a pure devotee, but now I'm something else. But the beauty of bhakti is that, here's the thing, getting the balance. The balance of sadhana with seva, with service. And making sure that we have a strong sadhana, because that will make us very pure-hearted and renounced. We'll naturally develop those qualities. So it's a process. And sometimes we'll be making progress and sometimes we'll slip. If we stick at it, we'll gradually become inspired just to serve Krishna and do nothing else and give the results, everything. We're not asking Krishna for a new pair of shoes or whatever it is that we might want. We're happy to render service because we know that's pleasing to Krishna and it's also pleasing to ourselves. Right? And that it's not always a struggle. We're always struggling with doing something. That means we're doing the wrong thing. Usually, we need to go and do something where we can be a little bit more happy. And Prabhupada says, you know, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That will be a natural symptom of a devotee. Yeah. But it's actually not... Yeah. Interesting to read the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. He rejects that. And yeah, you know, yeah. All right, let's. I think now it's time to go and put it all into practice. Huh? But it does, you know. We need to be introspective in assessing our own position, and what we need to do to make the next steps in our devotional practice. And you know, making sure that we're properly, there are certain points in our lives where we'll have to make decisions. You know, generally you've done your study, you're then pursuing your career, you make a determination, I get married, what's my career going to be? You know, there are points in our lives where we have to make those decisions, and they're tough, they're not easy decisions to make. Or we're at the end of our, you know, so-called material life. Now that's also, we have to make decisions then too. Or they'll be made for us. Is that right, Mahatma? We get too old. We can't do anything that we used to do before. Right? So we have to chant Hare Krishna. We don't get a choice. All right, let's go. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaurav Bhaktavrinda ki jai.